that's good.
Isn't that good?
That is good. Music is everything.
Isn't that good?
It's just a full body. Music can make or break the whole mind. Love it.
Music can make or break the whole mind.
Yes. Full.
Let's talk about that.
Experience. I love music. About that.
Do you really?
Oh, love music. I have to have music on all the time. It's got to be on my alarm clock. I have to have it playing in the background. I always need music.
How come?
Because it elevates my mood. It can bring me great happy feelings. It can also, if I'm feeling nostalgic or serious, it kind of helps me just get myself in a great mindset. I learned that from my dad. We have an intercom system that plays around our house, and my parents would always have, we would always have music on. So it's kind of like I maybe didn't know anything different because we always had music.
As a little girl, there's always music playing in the house.
Always music.
Any certain kinds of music?
A lot of 70s. I think, yeah, my dad was in, probably the acid trips doing all the 70s stuff. He's got quite.
I'm sure your dad will be happy to know. Yeah, my dad was doing acid, playing music on the internet.
I'm not saying that, but he definitely channeled all of the, I know a lot of the 70s genre.
Sure.
But my mom, I mean, yeah, it was just, music was always part of our house. It just made our house a happy house.
I haven't even introduced your story.
This
is
all good.
This is Story Pryor. That is her name, Story. How can I ask you? Because people are going to wonder how you got the name Story.
Well, my dad tells the best story of it, but I just say that I was named after the Milwaukee Brewers baseball stadium. It was built on a rock quarry called Story Quarry. So a lot of baseball lineage, and then a family or a family friend that helped my parents when I was when my mom was in labor with me, named Story John. So there was kind of just a lot of spokes.
So a woman named Story John helped your mom when she went to labor with you.
Yes.
And then your dad wanted to name you Story out of a baseball park.
The whole piece together, yes.
There's a whole story to the story.
Story was just piercing, I guess, at my parents from all different angles.
S-T-O-R-E-Y.
E-Y. E-Y. Yes.
E-Y. Early on in your life, you were just adamantly opposed to anything to do with marijuana.
Oh, well, you know, growing up in Kansas, and I was born in 1983, I'm 38 years old. I had people I knew in high school that smoked marijuana, smoked pot. And, there were, always glazed over, not the most ambitious. And I remember just coming from the upbringing in the childhood that my parents both being entrepreneurs, being driven, focused on work, like that was just not a lifestyle that I ever could look at or just, kind of, I had this stigma that people that smoked pot were just lazy. So I grew up with that. And I thought that, okay, anytime I smoke pot, I'm just going to be sitting down and doing nothing or eating. And, society.
I got to tell you, every time I did it, that's all I did.
Yeah.
I hated it.
You did?
Oh, yeah. I hated it. I hated it because I'm like your dad and mom. I'm going. I want to go.
Yeah.
I want to get stuff done. And going, hey, man, you want to come over and do this and chill? And went,
yeah.
No, I don't.
Yeah.
And then afterwards I'm going, why am I eating all this stuff?
Exactly.
I feel terrible.
And you're like finding olives and chips and you're like, feel like you're some sort of chef, you're just.
And then a couple years
eating,
ago.
Yep.
Yeah. A couple years ago, this woman said, hey, Dave, why don't you try, have you tried one of the gummy bears? That? Yeah. And I went, no, I don't like doing that stuff. She goes, just try it. So, okay, I'll do it. So I tried one and I was editing video. Halfway through, I forgot how to edit. And the next thing I know, this is absolutely true.
That was a pretty good gummy then, right?
The next thing I know, I'm peeling carrots and folding laundry.
So that you got a reverse effect there. Right?
But they were organic
on speed.
What am I peeling carrots?
I feel
like some Carlos Castaneda story, about going in the desert doing mushrooms, doing all this weird stuff. Yeah. I'm peeling organic carrots, and there were purple carrots, yellow carrots, and I wasn't hallucinating. They really were.
Sure.
So I'm done with that stuff.
Yeah. I am by no means any expert on marijuana, cannabis whatsoever, but it's true. Anything you put in your body, we're all so different. So if you're allergic to something, it can affect you in different ways. It's
sure.
Cannabis is food. It's from a plant.
It's a plant.
So it can affect us. It can make us either wanting to chill or it can give us energy. I've found a couple strains that, you know, when I want to focus, I'm a creative type too. Mm-hmm. And so I have a gummy that I'll take if I want to kind of get in a creative zone.
Really? And yeah. It helps you do that?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, or it could be just mindset too. But I have used marijuana to kind of help with just a lot of, whether if I'm tired and I need to relax.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about. Because you came, now your company's called Plant.
It's called Plant.
And what does your company do and what do you sell?
Yeah. So, I started, and I wouldn't say I'm a daily cannabis user. In fact, I haven't taken cannabis in over a week now. So it's not like it's something that it's a daily practice for me. But in 2018, I started taking cannabis because I had the worst insomnia. Just, I could not sleep at all. And anytime that I would take a gummy or maybe smoke a little bit of a vape, I would be relaxed and I would be able to go to sleep. And so I just started taking it right before I go to bed. I'm actually in bed doing the gummy because I don't like myself functioning in public, at least at that time I was scared to, because I didn't know, you know, I didn't want to be in public around people.
You want to be peeling carrots in public.
Exactly. Right. Yes. Or just, you know, seeing things flying out from the sky, whatnot. But I started doing cannabis and the more I would talk about it with some of my friends that were professionals, business professionals, worked a corporate environment. And at that time too, I was the director of global events for a $1 billion company.
You were?
And yes. And I was traveling the world with an event team. We were in 16 different countries.
Doing what?
Our biggest event was 15,000 people.
What were you doing?
We were putting on events to grow the consumer base for our company. Okay. It was a multi-level marketing company, a network marketing company selling health and nutrition products.
Okay.
And it was event production and event planning is a huge passion of mine. Love events.
Oh, neat.
I just love bringing people together. I love creating memories and making people laugh and smile. When I can make someone laugh or smile, it's the happiest time, right? No greater feeling on the planet.
You bet.
But I am a perfectionist. I'm a type OCD, just everything has to be in order. And I mean, the expectations that I have on myself is just, it's not real.
Is that what kept you up at night?
That's what kept me up at night.
Because you're doing those reviews, you're doing that
everything.
You're doing that debrief in your head at night.
Yes.
And you're
going,
oh, I didn't get this done. I could have did that done tomorrow. I got to do this.
I was plugged in 24 hours a day.
I get that.
Going to sleep, looking at emails, waking up. I mean, I had no boundaries either. And when you have no boundaries.
What do you mean by that? No boundaries?
Just boundaries of, you know, it's 6 o'clock. I can leave the office. I never know how to turn off.
I got you.
So I would work all the time. If anyone needed me, I was always there. I was always responding and work had just taken over my entire being. I didn't know who I was outside of work. And so I was using cannabis to kind of help my brain stop for a minute, just to slow down and just relax.
And it worked.
Yeah, it did. I would wake up in the middle of the night and I'd be, you know, stressing about something that was happening. And I was a constant stress case.
I got to ask you, because, you know, you say these things and I got to ask you, what were you chasing? What were you chasing? Do you know what I mean by that?
Sure.
What were you chasing? Were you trying to please your mom and dad? Were you trying to prove somebody that told you you weren't worth a darn early in your... I find out that's what people do. They're chasing something. Sometimes they don't even realize what they're chasing doing what you're doing.
Yeah, it's... I was constantly chasing something, a vision of myself in my head that wasn't real, but I was never content with anything. Nothing was ever good enough.
Gotcha.
And as an event planner, you're only as good as your last event. So how do you top the last event? You know, I would hire Tony Robbins for a 5-hour keynote and I'd stay up all night thinking, okay, after that event, how can I make our next event bigger and better?
You hired Tony Robbins?
Yes.
Did you ever get a chance to talk to him about
Absolutely.
That stuff?
Oh, not specifically about this, but you know, I got to work with his creative team for, you know, a few months.
He's, I mean, his whole creativity, that stuff is fascinating what he does.
Oh, for sure. Well, and when you're paying Tony the ticket price that we did, it's so worth every single penny. But I was so maniacally focused on making sure that when he was speaking to our audience, he knew the vernacular of our company and would really understand the product and the message that we wanted delivered and the outcomes. And so I remember just up 3-4 in the morning writing notes for Tony. And I'm a devil in detail. I get fixated on so many things. And I was constantly, so back to your question, just constantly chasing perfection.
I got to ask you, and I'm talking to you in your parents' house, and I'm not sure if they're even listening, because were you driven, did your mom or dad, did they drive you to be perfect? Did they say, you got to get that done? Were you driven by that? Because most kids are. I got to tell you, what I'm driven by was from a dad.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. And, had you asked me this question 6 months ago, my answer probably would have been completely different. But in the past 6 months, I've done a lot of work on myself. And I've realized I've connected the dots of where did my perfectionism, I've always known I've been a perfectionist, but where did it come from? I'd always blame it on myself. But growing up, blame it on my parents.
It's so much easier to blame it on your parents.
When my dad got released from baseball and our house, it was like, what's next for my dad? And I remember my parents starting their own company, and they would take my sisters and I, and we would be in the office at all hours of the day helping my parents, whether it's answering phones, sending faxes. They were starting a health and nutrition company at that time. And we would be labeling our own products, our own bottle, or the labels on our own products. And I remember my dad would come and look over our shoulder and be like, nope, it's not straight there, or there's a bubble right here. So we'd have to take the label out of the bottle, out of the label, and reapply the label. And I just remember so many times, you know, having to redo things because it wasn't perfect. It wasn't, you know, and I love that. I there's so much value in having just
that is a high, skill.
It's, you know, standards. And I love that my parents instilled some high standards because, I mean, I remember going to school and I would get a B on something. I'd look at my mom and dad and they wouldn't, you know, they would be like, well, an A. And I just, from there, it's not like they were saying, if you get a B, you're in trouble. But I knew that if I wasn't a straight A student, I graduated with a 4.3. I knew if I wasn't, doing my best, and my best was 100%. My best was more than 100%.
Right.
I strived for perfection.
And is that what was that had to be keeping you up at night?
Oh,
I mean,
was.
When you're
miserable.
Doing all this stuff, it had to keep you up at night just because you can blame stuff on your parents. People try to do that, you know, but after a while, somebody taught me this. Your past is a reason, not an excuse.
Of course.
To do that.
Yeah.
And so it's a great skill set to do that. But after a while, what we learn from our parents, have to take the control of our life.
100%.
And learn how to manage it.
Yeah.
At the same time, keep the skill level there, but not drive ourselves crazy.
Right. Yes. And that's what I was doing. I was driving myself crazy. Gotcha. That's not the best way to live. It's not. Life is so much better. Life is imperfect.
Sure.
And when you're striving for perfection, it is a very miserable, miserable place to be.
And perfection is nothing more than a moment.
Right.
It's a moment.
Yeah.
You go, that was perfect for the moment, but then another moment's coming up.
Right.
And if it's tough stuff.
Well, and the word perfect is so subjective too.
True.
What I think is perfect is can be someone's completely different of how things are perfect.
Sure.
What I think is good is someone's, different how they term being good.
Gotcha.
So, you know, the level of how I had instilled perfectionism in my brain was just, it was unattainable. And it's been something over the past couple of years I've had to learn and understand that I'm truly killing myself because I'm trying to be perfect. And with my career and the career path that I chose, when you're on a platform too, when you're speaking in front of thousands and thousands of people and you have to say the right word and look the right way, and, you know, it's... it just became a downward spiral. My perfectionism became a disease, if you will. It just, it was a toxic cancer in my body.
And you said it led to pain and depression.
Yeah. Oh,
explain.
I can realize in high school, I had a horrible eating disorder, and it was because I knew I could control the food and going in my body, but I wanted my body to look perfect. And I had this ideal of how I wanted my body to look, and I had an awful eating disorder. And so that's when I kind of really realized of this perfectionism is driving my being. And that's when I started getting really depressed, was in high school and college, and my eating disorder continued throughout college, and I abused alcohol. I wasn't doing the most healthy choices for myself, and it was because I was escaping from me.
You know, which is the core of addiction. You know, with my experience, with talking to so many people, addiction is nothing more than doing anything to escape from your own feelings.
Yes, that's what I was doing. I didn't want to be at home. And when I say home, a home is us, ourselves. I have to live in my brain every day. And I wanted to escape this home. I didn't want to live in this brain of mine anymore.
And I'm guessing, too, it's got to go with, you had to be in relationships that weren't good for you.
Yeah.
I mean, that just goes with it.
Yes.
Doesn't it?
Oh, well, you attract, when you're not mentally in a healthy, happy state, you're going to attract people that are, you know, making you feel comforted. And unfortunately, in 2 years ago, I got in a really awful relationship that has definitely dictated a lot of the self-growth that I've been going through. Mm-hmm. I met someone that I fell head over heels in love with, and I'd never really felt what love was because I never really loved myself,
sure.
But I had felt so much love in this person.
Sure.
And also at the same time, I was, the company that I was working for had done a massive organizational reshift. And so, within a week, and I'm saying this figuratively, within a week I had lost, because I had worked so much. My work was my husband, my kids, my house, my family, my friends. Work was everything to me, and I lost it in a day. But then I had this man in my life that I felt comfort and
that was not your husband.
Yes, not my husband, but I used that in just a figurative tense because work was so much of my being. I didn't have a life outside of work.
Gotcha.
So I made work just everything that I had done. But so when my job ended, I had this man in my life, and I felt comfort in the love that he was giving me. And for 2 years, I was in the most abusive relationship imaginable. Domestic violence,
physical abuse,
a lot of physical abuse, and I didn't grow up with. I mean, my mom and dad love each other. I didn't grow up with any. You know, this was so foreign to me. I'm like, how am I entering this relationship? And he's hitting me. How?
I'm just so curious. I've never I've never asked this question before. I've always wanted to, and the opportunity. And you said you can ask me things. The first time he struck you, mm-hmm. Why didn't you just leave and say, I'm never going to be with him again? Why wouldn't you do that? Why didn't you do that?
Yeah, I wasn't strong enough. And in fact, he hit me for the first time in front of a family setting. It wasn't directly in my family, but we were in California on a family trip, and I had invited him to come. And he threw me out in the street because I had caught him on a lie that he had told me. And he hit me right then. And I remember hopping in a car, getting in a cab, and I was like, I cannot tell anyone. I can't tell anyone this just happened. I wanted to hide it. I didn't want it. A man that hits a woman, like, this is, you know.
Embarrassed, ashamed.
Oh, I was so embarrassed.
Humiliated,
like,
everything.
This can't be my life right now. This is awful. This is awful. So, but that evening, I couldn't hide it from my family, and I was sitting in a police department with my mom and my sister, and we're all crying. And I remember the police officer was saying, you know, 9 out of 10 times domestic violence, women go back to the abuser. And in my brain, I'm looking at my sister and my mom. I'm like, there's no way on the planet I could ever go back to this man, ever.
Did you?
I did.
Why?
I didn't love myself. I hated who I was. And when you're he fed me all the things I wanted to hear. I'm so sorry. I love you. Let's get back to God together. I love you.
We
go to church together. We would go to church together.
Oh my.
And I'll do anything. You're my wife. You are the mother of my kids. And at 35 years old, we're women coming from the Midwest. I wanted to get married. I should have been married by then.
I just want to understand. Yeah. So were you married to him?
No.
Did you have kids with him?
Nope.
Okay, but he wanted you to be the mother of his kids.
Yes,
that's what he said. Okay.
Yes, sorry, he was painting the picture. Okay, I just want to make sure. Please forgive me. I'm so sorry. I love you so much. That's why I hurt you.
So he's just as crazy as you are.
Yes,
and I'm trying to be a little facetious here.
No, you're right.
But when you look at that, 100%. I mean, what I realized, because I told you earlier, I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon, and I would talk to people you talk about alcoholics and how crazy they are, and I realized, oh hell, I'm just as crazy as she is, because I'm staying in this relationship.
Of course,
and once I found that ability story to laugh at myself and going, what am I, nuts? I'm the nuts. She's not. I'm the crazy one. Once I started laughing at myself, it helped me. Did that ever happen to you? Did you ever get to a point, maybe out of it or something, when you went, oh man, where the hell was I?
Well, when you're in an environment like that, I was so alienated. Well, I alienated myself, so I didn't have an outside support, and I'm not placing the blame on anyone. This is all me.
I got that.
But I went back in it, and I kind of just wanted to fix it. I wanted to fix everything I could.
Oh, because you can fix those guys.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
For sure.
Oh, yes.
There's never been a problem that I haven't found a solution
Absolutely.
For.
Absolutely. The Miss Perfectionist.
I love challenges. If there is a fire, I'm running towards it. I want to get that fire out.
You're going to teach those firefighters how to put it out. I'll show you how to put it out.
I got this.
I'll teach you how to put out a fire.
Yes, that was kind of my mindset, and I thought I could fix.
How did it end where you went, enough?
Well, I can get granular on the story. I'm
not sure what granular means, but go ahead.
Well, just the specific on.
Yeah, if you want to get gritty, go ahead.
I stayed in this for 2 years. So after that night that happened, I stayed in it for 2 more years, and I hid it from my family. And my family, they gave me an ultimatum, because they did find out I had him arrested a couple more times. Again, I'm talking about this for the kind of the first time out loud.
Thank you for trusting me. And I want to make sure it comes across so people understand the sincerity story. I want people to understand this is very difficult. I want people to understand the sincerity of the story. I'm not used to saying that. But I do, because I thank you for trusting me, and you just have to laugh, because we deal, as I told you and told you folks, we deal with some pretty serious things, and this is about as serious as it gets.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure that you feel comfortable.
Yes.
So let's keep going.
Yes.
But you had him arrested, and you stayed with him again?
Again. 3 times I had him arrested, and I kept wanting to fix. I kept wanting to get that fire out. I was killing myself, truly, because I loved him and that more than I loved myself. And that was my comfort zone. And if I felt like if I were walking away, I would have failed at another relationship, because I'd failed at a relationship prior to that, and I didn't want to fail again.
I have to ask this story, not meaning to interrupt and be rude. How, this is what you said, I want to repeat what you said. How can you love somebody, you said, I love this guy. How do you love somebody you have arrested and that beat you up? What does love have to do with that?
I'm still going through my healing process and really trying to identify how, because when you look on it from the outside, it like, what in the world?
Sure.
How can, I had friends prior to this relationship that would tell me, so their counterpart hit them, and I am like, what on the planet? Like, my goodness.
Yeah.
And so now I'm here in this position, and it's an out of body experience. It's truly something that you can't ever explain unless you go through it. And I just didn't love myself at all. And he had such a power on me. I did a lot of research on narcissism.
But we all know that stuff. We all listen to Dr. Phil. but you gave him the power. I mean, I got to ask, here you grew up with loving, caring parents, mm-hmm. you know, and did you think you weren't worth being in a better relationship? Was it a worth thing too? I wasn't worth.
Sure. Yeah. And you know, I grew up and my parents did fight in front of me and,
that happens
you know,
kids.
It does. But I carried a lot of, I always wanted my parents to stay together. And there was my parents would talk about getting divorced. And I remember coming and being perfect. My parents can't get divorced. That wouldn't make the perfect family. We have to stay together.
Gotcha.
So I've always wanted things to look and, you know, I cared too much about what other people thought.
That's really what that's, absolutely. I mean, I keep hearing this. You were concerned about what the outside 100%. Was looking in instead of what the heck was going on with story.
Yes. Oh, I cared so much more about what everyone else thought of me and how it was going to look or story could never be associated or attached to a criminal or an abuser. Like that would just tarnish your reputation. I didn't want any affiliation with that, but no, I kept staying in it.
I got to ask.
Yeah. The final straw.
What turned it?
Well,
what turned it that you weren't going to turn it back?
We went and got counseling. I actually took him. We went to church often, and we would read the Bible together. I mean, we went. We did a lot of. We tried, or at least I thought. But it was now that I look back at it, it was all fake. It wasn't real. And the final straw was I had joined a gym and he came up to me at the gym and said, get off this treadmill right now. You can't belong to this gym. And he goes, I own you. And I remember something clicked in my head. I'm like, this is not what I can live with.
I own you. That ought to be, if you write a book, what a name for the book, I Own You.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And to feel like he was. I was allowing this man to own me. And I was like, I cannot do this to myself anymore.
Gotcha.
I left the gym. He ended up coming over to my place that night, threw rocks. The next morning, he threw more rocks.
No, he wasn't throwing the pebbles. He wasn't throwing pebbles like in Romeo and Juliet.
No,
he's not throwing pebbles on the windows,
you know,
singing
serenade,
songs.
Rose petals were thrown. No, we were talking big rocks were thrown at my door. And
you know what's interesting? We're dealing with two desperate people. Mm-hmm. He's as desperate as you are.
Absolutely.
He's
lost.
He's as desperate to control you as you are to whatever you were.
To control and get out of that situation.
My goodness.
And I had no control. I had lost all control. And
so
he
comes over and he's throwing rocks.
Throwing rocks. And the big rock busted through and he runs right through me. And he's told me he was going to kill me before. There was nights where I have to sleep in my car because I thought at night he would come and use a gun because he knew where I would sleep. I had a lot of fear for my life. But that morning, it was 8 a.m. on a Friday morning, and I ran with my cell phone into a busy street, and I called the police. And I remember thinking, this is the last time I'm ever going to call the police because I'm not going to be in this situation anymore. And he was arrested, and that's the final straw. Yeah, the final straw.
You know what's interesting? I heard him say it, and I'm not a big quoter of Dr. Phil, and I'm sure he didn't come up with this himself, but with everybody in any bad relationship, you've had enough when you've had enough.
Yeah.
And there is a moment that happens where you just say to yourself, that's it.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's what it was.
And, you know, my parents had given me an ultimatum of story. You have to move. You need to change your phone number or you're not going to have any contact with us. And I love and appreciate my family for drawing that measure because my family is everything to me.
Gotcha.
And I knew how severe if I kept in this, I was going to lose my family. And I couldn't allow this to happen anymore. Mm. So, I look back at, I should have left then. But it truly, you know, experience is our greatest teacher, and I had to go through each of those experiences to get the strength to that final straw to say enough is enough, and I'm done.
You know, story, while you're talking, and you know what I do for a living. You know my whole premise of you just have to laugh. And while you're talking here, that little bit of sarcastic, wanting to throw a lighter thing on this, and I'm thinking at this moment, well, gosh, story, I can't imagine why you couldn't sleep at night.
Yes, right?
Gosh, why?
I know.
Why couldn't you sleep at night, Story?
I was sleeping next to the devil.
What are you so worried about,
yes,
Story?
When you sleep next to the devil, it's hard to sleep.
By the time it ended, how long ago was this?
To currently, right now?
Yeah.
It's been a little over a year. A little over a year.
And you haven't seen him since?
I unfortunately have run into him a couple places, not intentional,
yeah,
but, our paths have crossed a couple times,
yeah,
but there's been no interaction or anything.
I got to ask you something. I wanted to ask you this earlier on, and I've never ever asked anybody this question, but I want to ask you this. Okay. When I first met you, I saw you walk in, you're tall, you're slender, you have blonde hair, you're very attractive. And I'm wondering, with the way you look and guys saying anything to you to go out with them or to do anything, how on earth at this point can you trust somebody?
Yeah.
What are they going to have to do to this point? I mean, to trust you. I hope that's a fair question to ask you.
Yeah.
Because guys are looking at you. You know that's going on. Mm-hmm. How do you know that a guy's going to be sincere and be that guy that he does go to church or does believe this, that he's sincere?
Yeah.
That this guy's not playing me.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think at the core of it all is I had to work on myself and I had to learn how to trust myself. Because I hadn't trusted myself. I didn't trust my decisions. I had completely lost who I was. So to have a person come in my life after this 2-year span I was in, I wanted to make sure that I trusted myself first. I needed to love myself first.
But being away from him for a year, is that enough time?
Well, it's time is time. I mean, you can...
I guess that's kind of a dumb question.
Well, but I hear what you're saying. And I don't want to waste, and I'm using air quotes here. I don't want to waste
You got the air quotes with your fingers. Yeah.
I don't want to waste any more time. So I had to make a choice of story. You've got to work on yourself. You have got to dig in to find the inner, what made you so unhappy? What made you not love yourself? What made you not trust yourself? And I can't bring this to anyone else in my life, because I don't want to bring this baggage of not trusting, you know, another man that could come and love me. I don't want to look at, oh, okay, his phone is turned upside down. That means that he's got texts coming through, because my ex cheated on me 100 times.
Sure.
So, you know, and all those triggers that would pop up, I didn't want that to affect any relationship after that. But I had to work on myself.
In a year's time, though,
yeah,
you've answered all those questions?
No, I think it's a lifelong journey. It's, you know, I think it's something that I'm always going to connect the dots, and things that trigger me. You know, if I see the kind of car that he drove, I sometimes I'll go back into, oh man, that's when he chased me in the parking lot. You know, I'll have these triggers, but I now have a level of like peace. I've found peace with this. I'm as crazy as it sounds. I am grateful for this because
I get it. I get what you're saying.
I needed to go through this. I had to. I needed to work on myself, and this is God's way of teaching me through all of these experiences. I had to go through this, and I'm so grateful for it. And I think now that I can approach it with a sense of like gratitude of thank you for this experience. It was an experience that it happened, and I cannot waste the rest of my life living in that experience. I can't.
Sure.
It makes me sick because I just know how much I can accomplish in a day. I know how much I can accomplish in a year. And that's why I say this past year has been a lot of growth. There's been days when I don't want to get out of bed. I will sit in bed all day long because I don't want to face what happened to me. But that's not how you heal. You have to face it. It happened. And find the lessons of it. Find how that experience shaped me. And I have some people in my life right now that I'm using my story to help them. And I love that. I love it.
You know, there are a couple things here, if I may. People have asked, what is my purpose in life? I have discovered in talking to so many people, your purpose in life is what you went through that you never planned to go through, but you went through it. You went through it, not around it, not over it. You understood it. You dealt with it. You didn't go around it or over it. You dealt with it. And now you know what you went through. Your purpose in life now is what you've went through and help other people with what you've been through.
Yes.
Or you wouldn't have gone through it.
Right.
Yeah. So now you can help other people do that. And that's what I've learned about that is, you know, when you're laying in bed or you're laying in bed, and this is the folks listening is going through it. When you're laying in bed and going through this stuff and you're going, I can't avoid it and I can't go over it around it. I have to deal with this. So I got to make friends with it. Mm-hmm. So when it comes back, I go, yes. Oh, it's you. I know you.
Hey there.
Hey, you're not going to hurt me. I know who you are. Yep. Thanks for the reminder. I won't do this again, but I'm not. And I don't mean to name drop, but I always like to give references. When I interviewed Patch Adams, he said, emotions are good. The only problem when they become chronic, when we stay there.
Yes.
And so laying in bed is staying there. But you've made the conscious choice to go, I'm not staying there anymore.
No, I'm not. And I read a book called The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer. And it really, really changed my way of thinking and my mindset. Because
what about the book? What do you remember, what you gleaned from that to change your thinking?
They talks about the roommate in your head. And the person that you have talking to you all day long is this person that's sitting here talking to you. Oh, story, you said the wrong word. Oh, story, you're wearing the, why did you say that? Why did you do that? Oh, story, you spent 2 years with this, you know, horrible person. You wasted 2 years of your life. I would sit and replay that, this person in my head, the worst person in my head, this roommate up here.
So that book by Singer made you aware of that person talking to you.
Yes, I didn't even know what that was. We always hear about the inner voice and, you know, the
Did you evict the voice?
Oh, my. You're evicted. That roommate, this is the worst person on the planet. I never want to talk to her again. Yeah. I call her every single bad name out there. Sure. But you know what?
She'll come back, won't she?
Oh, she's back.
Oh, she'll bust through the door, through the window. You thought that guy busted through the window.
No, she won't ever leave. I need a restraining order. Yeah. I need a restraining order on her. I do have one on him.
And see, this is the point of you just have to laugh. Yes. What we're just doing right there.
Oh, for sure. When you laugh, I love it.
When you laugh about that and go, I can't even get a restraining order on this chick in my head.
Right. I need her locked up for good. Prison. The death sentence.
And that's what I mean. And I've talked to myself in this way. Okay. Why you're here?
Yeah.
You want to maybe give me a suggestion that'll help me? And I found out that works.
For sure.
I say that, 100%. If I say that to that voice, go, hey, listen, big mouth, why don't you shut up for a second and guide me in a way to help me, that, and then go, well, I'll be damned.
Yes.
Thanks a lot.
Right. Yes. And now I'm going to start loving my roommate. We got to live with this roommate the rest of our life.
Yeah.
We do. So we may as well love this roommate of ours. But
you got to keep him in line.
Yes, we do. We got to keep him in check. And you know what? It is a daily practice.
Absolutely.
It is a daily practice. Like drinking water, like breathing. I've also picked up yoga, which I love yoga. But, and I was anti-yoga my whole life. But yoga has helped me, you know, find my inner voice and being really mindful and present in the moment. And I think when you can really harness being present in the moment and know when your voice is telling you bad things, it's practice. You have this strength and hey, be quiet up there. I'm present in the moment. I'm going to let life unfold as it is. So
only control we have is to manage the moment.
Yes.
I can't manage yesterday or tomorrow.
No.
Or 2 hours from
and
now.
And I live, and Story Prior has always lived in the past or in the future. And I was miserable. I never knew what living in the present was, ever.
Really?
Ever. I never knew it because I was constantly fixated of all the bad things that I had done wrong in the past, or why am I not here? I'm 30 now. I'm 38 years old. Why am I not married with kids?
There's that voice.
Yeah.
There's that roommate.
Story, you're a failure. You should have been so farther along. Why aren't you here? And I can't, that is awful. That is the worst way to live. So just recently I've gone on this just discovery of like, my goodness, I do not want to look back at 38 years old and have regretted living my life in the past, of the past mistakes that I've made, or desire of the future that I don't even know yet. I don't even know if the things that I want in the future are things that I want. But I've made myself, you know, when you can make yourself miserable by wanting something so bad.
Well, you tell yourself, I should do this, I should do that. And I heard a great expression, don't do that, because nobody needs to should all over themselves.
I love that.
Use it, share it.
Oh, that's so good.
That we all got to all got to quit shoulding on ourselves.
Yes, shoulding. Oh, that is awesome. That is so good.
Your story is magnificent, and I look forward, and we look forward to keep catching up with you along the way, and finding out how the great stuff in your life is happening and how you're helping people. Will you come back to do that?
Absolutely, I'd love to. There's a lot more stories to come from this. So, a lot of great stuff.
Don't be teasing me. Back in the studio now, music's playing after just talking to Story, that amazing interview. I felt compelled to come talk to you after the interview from the studio in reflection after I listened to it, because I always listen to every podcast after it's done and listen to it to make sure it sounds right and everything's good. And I want to stress that's what you just have to laugh is about, is this. Situations that are not funny, and that when you bring humor into them or laugh at them, the situations you've been through that are sometimes horrifying, terrible, when you can find some humor in it, when you can laugh at it, you now own it. You own that emotion that terrifies you and haunts you, that will actually paralyze you. That emotion doesn't own you anymore when you can find the humor and laugh at it and understand it. That's why we say you have to go through it and have to deal with it. You have to deal with the emotion. And that's what Story just proved to us, that she's been through it, and she admits she's got further to go, and she's got more stories to share with us. And there's going to be a lot more stories from Story, and there's going to be stories from you and other people, how humor has helped them get through life's most difficult times. That's why I always say, keep laughing, stay amused, and when it's not funny, that's when you need to laugh at it, so you can own it. And that emotion does not own you, because when you laugh at yourself, you heal yourself. See you next time, and oh boy, there's going to be a lot more next times with You Just Have to Laugh. I got to tell you, I love this music. Listen to this. Hold on now. That's me jamming with it, baby. Stay amused. Keep dancing. Stay joyful. My little touch there.